beware the root of bitterness. And so this is sort of meant to be kind of a follow-up to that message. If you look at what God warns his people for, especially coming close to the end time, bitterness and offense is something that comes up from time to time in God's warnings. I'd like you to start off, if you'll turn over to Revelation 3. So I'd like to focus on one of the warnings that God has various warnings for his people. And this, of course, is the letter to the churches. And we're going to read to the warning in the Church of Philadelphia. It says, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things says he who is holy." Starting in verse 7. I'm sorry if I didn't say that. Revelation 3, verse 7. "These things," he says, "these things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who is who has the key of David, who opens and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens. I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door that no one can shut it, for you have a little strength and have kept my word and have not denied my name. Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan, those who say they are Jews and are not, but lie, indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I will also keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth." So here is the best of the letters written to God's people. He doesn't have anything really negative to say about any of them other than to keep on their perseverance. And God promises to keep them from the hour of trial which will come across the whole world. Here he's speaking of the Great Tribulation. And I think this is something that we would all like to avoid. As Luke 21:36 says, "Pray that you be counted worthy to escape the things that are to befall the world." And so as the world around us edges closer and closer to the end, there are things that we should be worried about. And God gives, if we go to in verse 11, it says, talks about that, "Behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast that no one may take your crown." So you think, how in the world, if this is the good church, nothing bad is happening to them, they just have to kind of maintain, how could somebody steal their crown? So they have everything going for them, and they're still given this warning that no one can take their crown if they're unless they're not careful and they allow it. So the word here for one, that no one may take your crown, isn't just referring to a person. The word here in Greek is meidais, and it means no one or nobody or no thing. Anything can be used as something as a wedge in your life. So let no one take your crown. No, it's basically saying don't let anything steal your crown. So it could be a person. It could be a movement of people. It could be an issue. It could be anything. So it's just not talking about somebody trying to sell you magic beans and you're deceived and next thing you know you've lost your crown. So there are, it's basically telling us don't let a person take your crown, don't let a trial take your crown, don't let issues take your crown or anything that could come up in your life. Beware of these things. So what are the things that we should be worried about? We talked about in that other sermon about a root of bitterness, how it can spring up in our lives. Something innocuous as a disagreement with somebody, you do something nice for somebody and they don't reciprocate, or somebody does something just highly offensive in an overt way and you're looking at it and it's bothering you and you might maybe mention it to them thinking that they would say, "Oh, I had no idea," and modify their behavior, and then all of a sudden they become upset with you and now you've got this thing in your life. And so these are things that can pop up in our lives. It's when people become offended that it can take on a life of its own. So today, I'm not going to warn us about being offended. I sort of did that in the Beware the Root of Bitterness. Today, I'm going to be talking about how you can identify yourself against being offended. The title of the sermon today is Becoming Offense Proof. How to protect yourself from becoming offended. That is what I want to focus on today. I'm sure you've all seen it more times than you can count. Friendships are destroyed by one or both members being offended by each other or by some action. And next thing you know, there's no reconciliation. People fall off the earth. They don't talk to one another again. Families have been destroyed by offense. Neighbors, they always say good fences make better neighbors because it's so easy to become offended with however you're living your life and how your neighbor is living their life. So today I'm going to give you three things to focus on to help you become offense-proof, because we need to strengthen ourselves against this very dangerous condition that Satan uses to get into our lives. He gets into our lives by whispering in our ear, telling us, that's not right. You shouldn't have to put up with that. This isn't something that anyone should have to deal with. This is wrong. You are the wronged party here. And Satan is sort of the king of offense. I mean, if you think about what caused him originally when God placed him at the seat of authority, put the entire creation under his authority, and he was in charge of everything. What did Lucifer become offended with? Probably it had something to do with finding out that mankind was going to inhabit the earth and get his entire domain, and that he was going to serve mankind. That's probably what caused him to become offended, as he started thinking about losing everything that he had and whispering in the ears of the other angels. Offense was what was used, I think, in his mind to destroy and warp and twist. And he knows it is a very effective tool that can affect each and every one of us as well. Remember, Satan doesn't care how or why you leave the church. Maybe for one person, they give up on God because of a death in the family. They wanted God to heal somebody in the family. God didn't, for whatever reason, heal, whether it was their faith or whether God's will. Something happens and somebody becomes offended with God and they just give up on their faith. Could be somebody's own personal trials in their lives where they have even sinned in their own self, and whether it's through crime or some other sort of sin, that they become so offended with themselves that they cut themselves off of the body of Christ. So there's a lot of different ways that Satan can use. Let's say he goes after the persecution route, and we're promised persecution. And after many, many decades, we're all still here. So he says, okay, persecution doesn't work against these people. What else can I do? He tries division, some issue, and wedge issue. And maybe that would work to drive people away from one another and out of the church. Then after so many decades, that didn't work. It worked for some, but not on others. I've got to get to what's left of the people, he's thinking. And getting them to become offended is one of those effective tools for reaching those of us that have been here for 50, 60 or more years and say, I'm never leaving. Nothing's going to happen to me. I'm not giving up. I'm going to endure to the end until somebody becomes offended. And then all of a sudden you watch them just completely change their demeanor and their whole outlook on their future. I've heard so many stories from people becoming offended or having friends or family of theirs becoming offended, and it just destroys everything that's been built over a lifetime, and it's so sad. So does being offense-proof mean that you can never be offended? If you think about that, if I could teach you how to become offense-proof, would you ever go through life without ever being offended? The answer can be yes, but it's usually no. Becoming offense-proof doesn't mean you could never be offended. It doesn't mean you won't ever get offended by some action or some issue or not. You think of it like if you were to put on a bulletproof vest, does that mean you can withstand all the slings and arrows that somebody might shoot at you? It will give you a layer of protection is what it's going to do. It's going to keep you from getting knocked off your feet and taken out and die from one blow. It will allow you to recover much quicker than you could have otherwise. In some cases, it might deflect some very difficult offensive comments, and it may not ever bother you at all. There are times that as a minister, you hear things from people that are upset with maybe a message that you gave or advice that you gave, and I certainly don't want anyone to be bothered or upset by a sermon or advice or anything like that, but it can happen. And when you are sort of going through these points that we're going to be talking about today, in many cases I say, well, I'm sad that they were offended or bothered by it, but it doesn't destroy me. You know, it doesn't mean you couldn't be. If you got enough people upset with you, yeah, it will have an effect on you. So again, this is about protecting yourself with a layer of protection. Like God says, put on the whole armor of God. It doesn't mean Satan can never have access to you, but it will give you some armor and it will allow you to come through a number of attacks and still be alive. So there's that. So where do we begin? The first point I would like to make here of three is to keep our calling in its perspective. When God calls you out of the world and he gives you a glimpse of his plan for you, what he knows you're capable of, the kind of growth potential that each and every one of us have, you can feel special, and you should. You should feel special. To be called out of the world, to be one of a few on the planet that God is giving an invitation to for this first invitation. We know that God's plan is he's going to give this invitation to the rest of the world eventually. But to be in this first group of people that God calls, you can feel special. But then again, you can think more of yourself than you ought. In Psalms 119 and in 165, it says, "Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble." The original King James says it this way, "And nothing shall offend them." If you understand and have this proper subordination to God to love what he is doing on this earth and keep that in its proper focus, it says here, nothing shall offend them. That's hard to do, though, to look at things through God's point of view each and every day, because we are so mired in the problems that each of us have to deal with, from health to finances to strife that's in our lives. All of those things are working against us all the time. So we can say, well, I studied my Bible and I know what God is doing in my life and in the lives of those around me. So therefore, I'm indemnified against any kind of offense. But then life hits you, as it always does, and it can be very difficult to keep your focus. So how do you have peace when there is so much trouble all around us? 1 Peter 2, verses 17 through 21, if you want to turn over there, tells us about what our priorities should be, especially in the midst of trouble all around us. 1 Peter 2, verses 17 through 23. You know, oftentimes these epistles of Peter and of James, if we spent more time reading them, I think it really prepares us to live everyday life. I mean, these guys are talking about how you get from today till tomorrow. You know, a lot of times Paul is dealing with big issues in church areas. He's dealing with law and grace, a lot of theological things, and we wrestle with these things and we get into doctrinal discussions. But when you read what Peter and James are often talking about, these are really kitchen table issues in our lives. Starts here in verse 17 of 1 Peter 2. honor all people. I mean, that's hard to do in a world that doesn't seem to give a whit about you. They don't care if you can't work on Saturday or you won't work on Saturday. They don't care if you don't eat this or you don't eat that. They don't care if certain types of language or content offends you. They just don't care. But it says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. So it sort of encapsulates everything. As far as everyone in the world, honor all people. In other words, don't go around looking at, you know, this nation or this leader or this group of people is lousy, you know, terrible. And you see all this on social media, people oftentimes tearing down one group to promote another group. And then it says, love the brotherhood. It's talking about the church. All those in the church, make sure so you're honoring those outside the church, so you're not causing offense, and then you're loving the brotherhood inside the church. And then we are fearing God, and we're honoring the king. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable, if because conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if you've been beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But if you do good and suffer, and if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. I mean, you all know people that have gone through really tough times. There are some people that I call oversharers. You've never met them. You didn't know them from anybody. You meet them in a line at a store, and they start telling you everything that's going on in their lives. They just share to a fault. You know, obviously, some of these people are looking for support. They're looking for maybe some people to give them some advice or at least to give them some compassion for what they're going through. But it talks about here, when you go through tough times, rather than go around telling everybody how wronged you've been, and you hear this all the time, you take it patiently and you don't talk about it. This is commendable before God. In verse 21, for to this you were called. Think about that. You were called to be persecuted for not doing anything wrong and to take it patiently. That's why we were called. If you think about it that way. You know, and I think about when Christ was going to the gallows, it says he opened not his mouth, not a reviling word. No, if anybody had the right and the privilege to say, what's happening to me is wrong, that would be Jesus Christ. Yet the example he gave us was not a word was spoken. And yet it's very hard to do when it's you that's being attacked. It says, for this you were called because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. You think about steps. I think about those last steps where he was pulling that crossbar or whatever part that he was loaded up with when he was beaten, humiliated, spat upon, and then had to walk those final steps to the horror of everyone who saw him. And that's what we were called, to be living sacrifices, as Romans 12 tells us. In verse 22, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. God is our judge, so if we are suffering, we are supposed to say, look, if I've done something wrong, God's going to take care of it. I don't need to go into the court of public opinion and try to make my case here. So when we understand and what our calling is all about, it isn't about being justified in this life. There is no justice in the flesh. It just can't be that way. If the purpose of God's plan is that he called people that said, I believe, and therefore I will bless them for believing, and everything in your life is going to go wonderfully, and you're going to be rich, and you're going to be famous, and everything is going to go your way, then let's face it. there would be a lot more believers today, because that would be the way to fame. But it doesn't work out that way for most people, does it? The purpose of our calling is to join the work of our father and elder brother. We have an example to follow. They want our help. And it was not easy for what they did. It's not easy for what we've been called to do. We've been called to go and to do the work of God. And Jesus had the most right of anyone who has ever lived, but yet he didn't take that privilege and revile anyone in return. We find out that someone says something unkind to us, we can be devastated, especially when it's done in social media. You know, we see somebody does something publicly. It's bad enough that you heard somebody through somebody said something, and you're like, do I approach them? Do I talk to them? It really bothered me. What do I say? But then when somebody does something publicly, I've been the victim of that a number of times. It is tough. It is tough. But you can't go into that arena and start slinging things. That's not why we were called. You know, some people want to make sure everyone knows that they've been wronged, that they are horribly offended. And what does the Bible say? Matthew 18 gives us the recipe for when a brother or sister sins against us. The chapter in Matthew 18 starts off talking about becoming like little children. And it's a long section there. And when you look at why Christ is talking about children before talking about becoming offended, it's easy to understand that. I remember a time as a child, I had this big blow up with the neighbor kid across the street. I don't remember grade school I was in. I remember coming home and telling my mom, I never want to see him again. You know, he's dead to me. I was horribly offended. That lasted a long time. It was almost dinner time before he knocked on the door and said, hey, can you come out? And hey, mom, can I? And, yeah, it was gone in my mind. The offense was gone. And my mom was just, how could you have made that big speech? You came in, made this amazing offended speech, and you know what? You can go and play tomorrow. After that speech that you made me listen to, you can just take the day off. And I remember thinking, wow, what's her problem? I do remember that to this day. So let's start here in Matthew 18, starting in verse 7. Matthew 18 and verse 7. It says, woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. So before it talks about offending us, about others offending us, it talks about our bodies causing others offense. If your hand, if your foot, or your eye causes you to sin, we'd be better off without it. It tells you to cut it off. Then we are commanded not to offend others, especially the little ones. And when you read verse 7, you think of others who offend, yet we are told in the next verse to beware of ourselves as offenders. So it's only after this that we get to the part about others offending us. So again, be like little children. Don't allow your body to cause you to offend. It's better off that you lose body parts than to have these offensive parts on your body. And then warns us, do not offend the little ones. Be better off to have a millstone tied around your neck and thrown into the sea. So after all of that, then we can talk about other people offending you, which is, you know, interesting how God expects us to look at one another, to love one another as ourselves, to ask ourselves, are we guilty of what we are offended by somebody else first? So moving down to verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. It's not about getting even. The purpose of reconciliation is just that. It's its own reward, reconciliation. It's not about getting even. It's not about making somebody pay for what they've done. It's not about publicly becoming vindicated. It's not about somebody being ashamed, whether public or private. None of that matters. What matters here is that you have gained your brother. And so then it goes on and talks about these other things. If he will not hear, then take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, then tell it to the church. Oftentimes people go straight to the church and say, so-and-so offended me. I need you to go and smite them. All right, so the order of operations here is that we go one-on-one because it's best to keep offenses and problems between people as private as possible, because it's easier to forgive and to forget when it's not a big, big deal. The bigger the deal becomes, the harder it takes to overcome, the more people have to be involved. But again, the goal here is reconciliation, not about getting even. So God is working to reconcile with creation. Think about God's point of view. He creates the entire world with the express purpose of sharing eternity with his creation. That's his goal when he creates mankind. And from the first Adam, all people have become estranged to him and reject him. If anyone has the right to be offended with anyone, it's God. Humanly speaking, I can see God saying, you know what? I want to have a good relationship with people, but not these people. I'm going to wipe them all out. I'm going to start all over, and we'll start with a new batch of people and see if I can become close with them. That's humanly speaking. Why would you want to reconcile with someone who's rejected you, that has lived their life in opposition to you, and yet God's plan is to do that very thing, to cause people to repent and to become reconciled with their God once again. God tells us in Romans 12 that vengeance is his. He will repay those who deserve it. So the first lesson of the called is that we deserve vengeance first. And before we get any for ourselves, that's what we should be remembering. Our calling is about we have been given something that we don't deserve. We cannot earn what we're being promised, and we're not going to obey our way into the kingdom of God. It can't be done. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try to obey God. Those of you who remember Jack Scruggs, when they would talk about certain things, he says, why do you do these things? Aren't you being legalistic? And he says, it's about obedience, not salvation. If you had children and you wanted them to clean their room, it's about obedience, not about life or death. You're not going to throw them out of the house. You're not going to smite them to death because they didn't clean their room, but you want them to obey you. So when you keep your calling in proper perspective, you start realizing you don't have the position where you have a right to be offended. And the only one who had the position of being offended chose not to take offense, and that would be God and his Son. So they had the right and position to become offended. They chose not to. We have no right to that offense. So let's keep our calling in proper perspective. Number two, you think about our Passover attitude. When we examine ourselves, find ourselves wanting, and come back to God in earnest supplication to recommit ourselves to our faith, when we take the symbols of the bread and the wine, and realize that there are so many things that are completely outside of our control. We cannot save ourselves. Only God can do that for us. We can't let go of certain offenses when they come. if you talk to Holocaust survivors, you talk to people who've gone through, and I've given sermons on both Holocaust survivors and people that have suffered horribly in war. I got to talk to one gentleman that was on the Bataan Death March and what it was like to live through that brutality. And it affected his life to such a degree that it cost him two marriages, a number of jobs, his health, a lot of sleep. And it just, the hatred of his offense just tore him up. And eventually found that the only relief he could get to his anger was to turn to God and ask for help with it. The second point here is take your offenses to God earnestly and in faith. Take your offenses to God earnestly and in faith. We need to realize that the deck is stacked against us. He didn't do anything that warranted him going into the Bataan Death March. Those poor people that went through that, and many others, and the story about Mr. Benson and the Holocaust stories that he has to tell, they will tell you that the only way they could get rid of those nightmares after a lifetime of them plaguing them is to give them to God. And God will actually take them from us in a way that you can be free of them. It's amazing what he is able to do. Let's turn over to Revelation 12. We read these stories of people who have been persecuted unto death. Their stories seem to punctuate our lives. We hear these stories and we think, well, how could somebody live through that or go through this? But we are promised that in the future, things are going to be very bad for some of God's people. In Revelation 12, verses 10 and 11, "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who has accused them before God day and night, has been cast down.'" Something that we look forward to on the Day of Atonement, that Holy Day pictures Satan being bound and taken off of the scene and being put into the bottomless pit. Can you imagine what it's like for God day and night to hear Satan accusing God's people that he called? And every time Satan causes us to stumble or become offended in some way, he's right there to accuse us before God. In verse 11, "And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb." That is what allows these people to overcome the slings and arrows of Satan. The blood of the Lamb. Christ's forgiveness through his life that he gave, that we can be forgiven of our sins, that we can be reconciled to God. That is what gives people the power to deal with Satan. And it says, "And by the word of their testimony," the way that people live their life. So living their life, not just making some altar call and making some statement of belief and then going back to your life the way it was, but actually living your life by your faith. "By the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death." So when they were given a chance to choose their physical life by denouncing their faith, they chose not to denounce their faith. We've seen this even in our day. There are terrorists and other people. There was even an event here in Oregon, you know, to think, well, that's on the other side of the world. But down at one of the colleges, down I-5, where a gunman comes in there and asks Christians to renounce their faith. And if they don't, he shot them. That's happened just in the last few years. "Satan is the accuser of the brethren, and he set up this world to oppose us. And we're not going to overcome him by our own strength. We are not going to succeed on our own. And so when we become offended and we're horribly bothered by what Satan has done in this world, it can be very easy to be offended. And oftentimes you hear the word offended and you think, oh, yeah, you're bothered by somebody. A squabble over this thing or that thing. But some of these things that people are offended by are lifetimes of abuse. People are offended by horrible acts of crime or war. And these people find relief from that by giving that trauma to God. And God gladly accepts that trauma from people. As Christ says, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He says that because he knows that what we're carrying through life is more than we can bear. It's breaking us under the weight of it. And so he says, give it to him. And as you understand, you can't have an ox yoked to two different rigs at the same time. It's got to be freed of one to be yoked to the other. So that's what we are offered, a way to release these burdens that we carry, the things that that can become too much. Like I said, a bulletproof vest will protect you. There was a kind of a funny movie. I don't know if it was one of the James Garner movies, Support Your Local Sheriff or one of those. But the townspeople give them the badge, and it's got a big bullet dent in the middle of the badge. And James Garner, I believe it was that actor there in this movie, goes, wow, this badge, it saved his life. And one of the townspeople says, oh, it sure would have if it wasn't for all those other bullets coming in. And sometimes that's what life is like. They just come at you from every direction. And so when we will eventually become offended, we need to give those to God. The third point is, do not take yourself too seriously. There are some people I've known that I would classify as not easily offended. You can tell them, you know, what you said really bothered me. And they'll say, huh, really? You might want to work on that. You shouldn't be bothered by that. They're not affected by the fact that you are bothered by them. They have this level of, like, what's the big deal? And I'm not saying you should be callous about other people being offended, but they are not the type of people that easily become offended by things. I'd like to take a look at Ecclesiastes 7. Ecclesiastes 7, verses 21 through 22. It's a very wise saying from Solomon. Ecclesiastes 7, verses 21 through 22. It says here, in fact, let's go back to verse 20. For there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. So, we've all been in the situation where we say, did you hear what so-and-so? They're very upset with you. And you're going, what did I do? And you're thinking, I'm a good guy. I'm not going around trying to make people's lives miserable. Why are they upset with me? And Solomon's saying, look, you know, you've said some of these horrible things in your lifetime to other people or about other people. Don't take yourself so seriously that you haven't been guilty of the same thing. This is what people do. Sometimes people say things that are unwise. Sometimes people say things they wish they could take back. And you have to not allow yourself to be so serious about the infractions of others that you are bothered. Which of us has been offended by something that we ourselves have been previously guilty of. The well-known author Stephen Covey wrote, "We judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their behavior." We judge ourselves by our intentions. I didn't mean to offend you. What I did was callous and unthoughtful, but I didn't mean to, so therefore I'm not going to be too hard on myself. But I'm going to judge you by your behavior and not by what you intended. In fact, I'm not even going to let you explain, because since I'm offended, I need the floor to grieve about how upset I am. So therefore, I don't even want to hear what you have to say. This is what we can so often do if we take ourselves too seriously. We can be too sensitive about others' motives. Why did somebody do that? Well, you know, clearly they're trying to overthrow the world. You know, the way people think of cats, you know, cats are always out there trying to work on the demise of the family, where dogs are just happy to be in the family. You know, it's sort of, we assume the motive is kind of what happens. But we never give people the benefit of the doubt that we ourselves would like to have. It's amazing how much easier it is to forgive when we treat others like ourselves. The second great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. That means giving others the benefit of the doubt and forgiving them as you would forgive yourself. We have to assume good motives. And sometimes you have to do this. There's an old saying about be the change you want to see in others. So you just start acting this way, and eventually you'll start feeling the way you want to feel. You can't just always assume everyone's motives are good, but you can act as though you do. You can say, you know what, I'm not going to think about why they did what they did. I'm not going to think of all the possible negative reasons. I'm going to assume their motives were good. And of course, inside you're still bothered. But you have to be the change you want to see in yourself. And you say, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, even though it still bothers you. And then you just keep reminding yourself of that. I'm not going to let this get to me. So we just had a wonderful fall festival. We want to be peacemakers. We want to live peaceably with all men. So let's embrace what God has revealed to the Apostle Peter, where he says, most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins. He said that in 1 Peter 4:8. Love covers a multitude of sins, which means if you have the proper love of God, when people do offensive things, love covers it. And all of a sudden, you're not as bothered as you would. So to recap, keep your calling in its proper perspective. Let's focus on God's work and not our needs and our wants. Number two, take your offenses to God earnestly and in faith, because God will help you work through and he will help you forgive, because that's what God's plan for mankind of reconciliation is all about. It's about forgiveness. So if you say, God, you're able to forgive me, I want you to show me how to forgive others. Why would God say, nah, I don't want to do that? Why would God withhold that from us? And number three, don't take yourself too seriously. We're all guilty. We're all guilty first. You know, we didn't love God first. He loved us first. So none of us are in a position to say, you know what? How dare somebody else? We don't have that right. We are guilty first, and then when we think that way, we see how much easier it is to give other people the benefit of the doubt. So let's not let offenses separate us from God and his people. And ultimately, God wants us to have eternal life, and not just us alone, but as a member of his family, living together, one another.